It is my pleasure to introduce to you Mark Kretcher, President of Life Dynamics. In 1986, Mark committed to working in the pro-life movement full-time after years of being an outspoken challenger of abortion. He created the Life Activist Seminar, which trained more than 15,000 pro-life activists across North America. Then, in 1992, he started Life Dynamics, Inc., which has become a widely recognized pro-life organization. Mark has always taken a bold and hard-hitting approach in standing up against abortion. As a result, Life Dynamics may best be known for their undercover operations, such as child predators, which have exposed shocking and illegal activities that happen inside the abortion industry, and which led to Life Dynamics being labeled the CIA of the pro-life movement. His topic, where we're heading.
Thank you. Well, thank you, thank you. I was noticing a minute ago that with the Benham brothers here, this is kind of a Texas contingent, right? I mean, you started out with people from Texas right off the bat. And that's a good thing. And, you know, there's a lot of misconceptions about Texas, obviously, from people who don't live there. But, of course, we obviously understand that everything of any interest or of any value originates in Texas. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, you hear this story, for example. I'll just give you one example of this. The story of George Washington cutting down the cherry tree. You know, his father comes home and the cherry tree that was in their front yard is laying over, and he notices it's been cut down. So he goes inside and says, "George, what happened to the cherry tree out in the front yard?" And he says, "Father, I'm sorry, I can't tell a lie. I chopped down the cherry tree." And so we've all heard this story, you know, whether it's true or not, we've all heard it. But the reality is that I did some research on this story many, many years ago and found out that it was not true, that it didn't happen in Virginia and it wasn't a cherry tree. It happened in Texas, and it was a mesquite tree. And George Washington's father had come home and found the mesquite tree that was in their front yard laid over, and he goes inside and says, "George, what's the deal with the mesquite tree out in the front yard?" And George says, "Father, I can't lie to you. I cut down the mesquite tree." And he says, "Well, pack up." He said, "If you can't lie any better than that, you'll never make it in Texas. We're moving to Virginia." So that's how that story actually happened, if you haven't studied that in your history. Anyway, what I want to do today is I want to kind of bring you up to date where we are in the pro-life movement, in my view, and where we're headed in the future. And I want you to understand that my perspective on this is different from some other organizations that might be involved in politics or in heavily involved in public education or whatever. My organization, as many of you probably know, is one that's kind of unique. When I started Life Dynamics in 92, I'd already been involved in the pro-life movement for many years, and I knew about what most of the pro-life groups out there did. And my commitment was that Life Dynamics wouldn't be like other pro-life groups. Whatever they're doing, let them do it. They're going to be better at it than we are. I was looking for the holes in the pro-life movement. We're going to plug those holes so that we have a more unified attack against the abortion lobby. And one of the things that we do, of course, as was alluded to earlier, we do a lot of undercover work. And our Child Predator Project was mentioned, where we identified that the abortion industry is running a nationwide pedophile protection racket. We were also the first people that found the trafficking in baby body parts, which has now been redone by David DeLeiden. And so we do a lot of these kind of projects. And because we work basically so often with people inside the abortion industry, we get a unique view of the pro-life battle that other organizations don't get. And this is one of the things that I always tell new employees when they come to work for us, is that you're going to get a view of the abortion battle working at Life Dynamics that you wouldn't get at anywhere else, mainly because of the type of work that we do. And by the way, one of the people that I gave that admonition to is sitting here. Renee Hobbs is my assistant, Life Dynamics, and now, now the vice president of Life Dynamics. And that was one of the things that I told you. Did it turn out to be right? Yes, it did. It always is. Because let me tell you something. This battle, when you look at it from the outside in, it's totally different than when you look at it from the inside out. You see things when you deal with these people that work at abortion clinics. When you sit down in a room with them, as some of you, how many of you have seen our video called An American Abortion Clinic, where we interviewed three three women from an abortion clinic in Houston right after the Gosnell situation, and I see a lot of hands going up that you've seen that. This was kind of one of those moments where you can grow up. Renee was with me the day that we did that. It was a day-long interview. And when you sit across the table from these people, I can promise you, you get a totally different view of what this battle is about than what you see on television or what you hear in the media. And so I kind of wanted to bring that perspective to you today of where we are, how we got where we are, and where we're headed. Now, one of the things that the national media is not going to tell you is something that was touched on earlier, and I want to reemphasize this. Contrary to what the media may tell you, the pro-life movement is winning this battle going away. We are winning in every front today. And I can tell you, as somebody who lived through what I call the bad old days, back in the 80s and 90s, when, I mean, for all practical purposes, if you lived through the 90s and the pro-life movement, you didn't see much hope. Everything was going against us. You'd see the polls that would show the public's position on abortion was 70%, 80% pro-choice. And the pro-life movement got whatever was left. In 1992, when I started Life Dynamics, the abortion rate was 1.7 million a year in the United States. There were 2,126 freestanding abortion clinics on the day that I started Life Dynamics in 92. 2,126. Today, the abortion rate is about a million, maybe slightly less than that this year. And there are about 550 abortion clinics left. Now, this is something nobody's going to tell you about in the secular media. But we've closed down, and when I say we, I'm not trying to take credit for this, for Life Dynamics. I'm saying the pro-life movement. You guys, all you guys, everything that you've done, since 1992, has shut down three-fourths of the abortion clinics in this country permanently. I don't mean they took a vacation and are going to come back. They're gone. They're not coming back. So we are destroying the abortion industry as a business. As a business, it is being destroyed right in front of us. They've got massive financial problems. Now, I've just written a new book called Siege. And in that book, I talk about many of the things that I'm going to talk to you about here today and flesh them out. I can obviously do more of that in a book than I can here in a very short speech. But the American abortion industry, contrary to what a lot of people will probably believe in the pro-life movement, they have massive, massive financial problems that if they don't solve, and by the way, that's what Obamacare is designed to do, is to solve the financial problems that the abortion industry has. But my background is in business. I was primarily in the auto industry for about 20 years, and I own two car dealerships, and so I have a long history in business. And I can tell you, if you analyze the American abortion industry today as a business, it's a bad one. This is not a sound business to get into. You would never put your money into this business. This is an industry that's in total collapse. And now you're starting to see a lot of people in the pro-abortion side come out here and writing articles saying exactly what I'm telling you, that they've got massive problems. I'll just give you a thumbnail example of this. Right after Roe versus Wade, within about a year after, several pro-abortion organizations and the United States government did a study of the cost of abortion. They wanted to know, okay, abortion's been legal. All these abortion clinics have opened up around the country. It's been legal now for a year or so. What are people having to pay for these abortions? Nationally, at that point, something like 92% of all the abortions in America fell between $325 and $350. If you did that same exact survey today, 40-some-odd years later, the average cost of a first trimester abortion in the United States is still about $350. They have not been able to raise prices in over 40 years. That's an indicator from a business standpoint. A business person would analyze that and say, wait a minute, inflation has been gigantic during that length of time, and especially in the medical community. Inflation's probably been twice as high in the medical community as it has been in any other area. Why haven't they raised prices in 40 years? And the answer to that is they can't. When they raise prices, their patient load plummets. That's a quote from Warren Hearn, who wrote the book Abortion Practice, who's an abortionist in Colorado and is widely recognized within the abortion industry as the guru of the abortion industry. And he says, if we try to raise our prices on an abortion $25, our patient load plummets. That's his quote from his book, Abortion Practice. They can't raise prices. And this is, so you can imagine, if you were doing something in 1971 or 72 for $325, $350 and it was profitable, it's probably not profitable in 2016. The big money for the abortion industry is in birth control pills and STD treatments. That's where the big dollars are. But let me tell you something. This is why getting rid of Obamacare is so incredibly important. Obamacare is specifically designed to take every abortion in America that costs $350 and turn it into a government-paid abortion that costs $4,000. And I lay this all out in this new book that I have out called Siege. And you can see how what this is what they're trying to do. And I lay out the proof for the fact that they're trying to do this. But that's what they're trying to do. They cannot raise the price on customer-paid abortions. So they got to transfer them into government-paid abortions at $3,000 or $5,000 apiece. That's what Obamacare is designed to do. And if it stays, that's what they're going to do. The second evidence that you can look at to see that we're winning is in polling. Like I said, back in the bad old days, 60 to 70% of the polls, 60% of the American people, if polled, would say they would identify themselves as pro-choice. Today, this has flopped. It has reversed. Now more people in America identify themselves as pro-life than pro-choice. We have turned that around. And one of the reasons that we've been able to turn that around, or I believe probably the primary reason we've been able to turn that around, is because of one of the other advantages that we have in the pro-life movement, and that's technology. I want you to think about something. Since the day this battle began, since January 22nd, 1973, every single piece of technology that has come along has favored us. Not one piece of technology has come along to favor the other side. Remember back in those days, our argument was the unborn child's a living human being from the moment of fertilization. And that's still our argument, right? Their argument was, no, they're not living human beings. They're obligate parasites. I remember that term. They've been through a whole lot of terms, right? Obligate parasites, globs of tissue, unsentient cells, all these kind of terms that they used over the years. But the problem they have is technology has shown that argument to be incorrect and our argument to be correct. Sonograms, for example. Sonograms came out and they took the pro-life argument that the unborn child is a living human being. They took that from a philosophical argument to an observable fact. How do you look at a sonogram of an unborn baby and say, well, there's nothing there. What is that? Well, what it is you can see those little hands and those little feet and those little fingers and those little toes, and you see him jumping around and all that and his little head. That's a living human being. So sonograms changed all of that. And every other piece of technology that's come along since Roe versus Wade has favored us. And furthermore, and the abortion, again, this is one of these issues. You don't take my word for it. Go online and do a Google search and you'll find the pro-aborts talking about this very issue. Why do you think they fight so hard in the legislatures to keep states from requiring that women see sonograms of their unborn children? They fight it tooth and nail. They know how technology is affecting them. And they also know not only has every piece of technology that's come along favored the pro-life side, but every piece of technology that's going to come along is going to favor the pro-life side. I want to give you a couple of ideas about this that you may not have thought about. Sonograms have obviously moved the needle a lot for us as a movement. How much more is that needle going to move? And by the way, what I'm about to tell you, I have reason to believe is on the horizon in the not too distant future. How much further than sonograms is the needle going to be moved by holograms? Holograms of an unborn baby. So you're not seeing on a flat screen, you know, a black and white, even a color picture of an unborn child. They're able to do a hologram and that child is floating in the air right here. And they're able to manipulate that child and move it around. And you're able to look around and see that child. You think that isn't going to change things? There's already people talking about that in Germany, there are people right now working on the technology to use sonogram machines to produce holograms of unborn children. You think that's not going to ratchet things up? And you think that the other side is not going to move heaven and earth to try to keep that technology out of the United States? You can bet on it. You want to ratchet it up a little bit more? You know, we use these little plastic models, little 10-week babies, right? We've all seen millions of those. We've all given out millions of them. But that's a nondescript, anonymous baby. That's a model. We're not far from the day when you're going to be able to take a sonogram image of an unborn baby, or maybe a hologram image of an unborn baby, and plug it into a 3D printer and hand a woman an actual model, not of an anonymous baby, but of her baby. We're not far from that. This is the stuff that's scaring the life out of the pro-aborts. They know how vulnerable they are to all this. And they're right now, their strategy right now, if you kind of read some of the things that they're saying, and kind of read between the lines of some of the things that they're saying, basically they're saying, we better codify legalized abortion in this country quickly and make it to where it cannot be undone by some hook or crook. Because if we don't, we're going to look up here and this technology is going to take us out of the game in 4 or 5, 10 years. We're not going to be able to sustain ourselves. Let me tell you something else that's happening in this movement. You know, I said the polls are moving toward our position. Renee and I were just walking around a minute ago, we were noting how many young people there are in this room. If there's an infiltrator here from the pro-abortion side, and there may be, bless their little pee-picking hearts, if there's one of them here, I guarantee you the thing that scares them to death is that table right there. Renee and I were talking a minute ago. She took some pictures to send back to somebody at the office to put on our next Life Talk TV show. I'm going to bet the third of the people that are here at this convention this weekend, I bet a third of them are under 20. Now, you go to pro-abortion events, they're all old people. They're all old, godless, leftist, Marxist, moral degenerate, social misfits. And I'm cleaning up my language on this. I know I'm a visitor here, so isn't that right, Renee? Because she hears me at the office all the time. What did that blah, 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 blah do? What do those blah, 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 blah do now? But you take all these godless, Marxist, socialist, moral degenerate, social misfits. You go to one of their conventions, they're all 60, 70. Some of them are older than me. Now, that's pretty hard to be and still be, you know, exchanging air. But they're not getting young people in. Alexander Sanger, who's the head of Planned Parenthood in New York, and the grandson of Margaret Sanger, speaking of godless degenerates, he was giving a speech, this was 4 or 5 years ago, and he was talking about this very issue, about he used the term graying. Our people are graying. They're getting younger. The pro-lifers are getting younger. And he made the point. He said, I speak on college campuses. That's my big deal, is go on college campuses and speak. And at that point, he said, in the last 2 years, I have not been on a college campus that had an active pro-choice group. But I haven't been on one college campus that didn't have an active pro-life group. And he was making the point. He said, if we don't reverse this, we're in trouble. Now you say, well, what difference does it make? If you have one person over here that's 75 years old and they're pro-life, and you have another person over here that's 75 years old and they're pro-life, it's still just one and one, right? Which one of these two people is going to live longer? That's the reason that they're scared to death. Now, among that age group, I mentioned a moment ago the effect or the influence of technology. It's exponentially greater in that age group than it is among people my age. I mean, I've been at this so long. I was here in Cleveland. I've been, I did several seminars for, I did one for Cleveland Ripe Life and one for Cincinnati for Dr. Wilkie, and then several for Jan Folger when she was running Columbus Ripe Life. And that was, Lord knows how many years ago, 25, 30 years ago. And I've been at this so long now, I'm kind of like the Methuselah of the pro-life movement. But this is honest truth. When I first got in the pro-life movement, it was and became kind of a nationally recognized leader, if you will, in the pro-life movement. I'd go to these national meetings of pro-life leaders, and I'd be the youngest person in the room, by far. Now I can go to these meetings and be the oldest person in the room. That's a sobering reality, by the way, if you haven't thought about it. But the fact is, these young people that are coming into the pro-life movement, one of the reasons for that is technology. I mentioned sonograms before. I don't know if you ever thought about this, but what sonograms did. Prior to the advent of sonograms, there had never been one single person in the history of the world who'd ever seen an unborn child. Not one. Now anybody can. And you think about how this affects younger people. It's this. We now have a generation of younger people who, and some of them aren't that young anymore, some of them are 30s, who have the ability to go to their house and find either a VHS tape or a DVD of themselves as an unborn child. I told my wife years ago when sonograms first came out, and then they first started giving, they said, if you're coming in for a sonogram, bring a VHS tape. We'll let you have a tape of it to take home. I told her the parole boards have got to be scared to death of this technology right here. Because now there's a whole generation of people that it's not some amorphous unborn child that they're never going to meet, never going to see on that screen. They say, that is me right there. That's me. How much more difficult would it be to take a child or take a young adult now, somebody that's voting age, and run as a parole board and tell them that an unborn child is just a glob of cells or an obligate parasite, that's all they are, if that person has the ability to go home and see themselves when they were an unborn child and say, I'm not so sure. I think that's me right there. I'm pretty sure that's me. And how much more powerful is this going to get, again, when we have holograms and 3D printers? What if you had a whole generation of people that had a little model of themselves when they were an unborn child? Not, again, not a generic model, but them. This is actually, it looks like me, look at that. And if they're bald, they really look like you, right? I'm sorry, not bald. There's other people in here that are bald. I don't want to be insensitive, but follically challenged or whatever you want to, however how you want to say it, be politically correct about it. But of course, our theory is, or my theory has always been, on that particular subject, God only made a few perfect heads. The rest of them he had to cover with hair. So that's always been my operating principle. Isn't that right? Don't you agree with that? Yeah, I thought you would. I see some other follically challenged people here that would probably second that opinion. Anyway, and this technology stuff is not going to do anything but continue to grow. That's where we're headed. That's one of the places we're headed. Now, the other thing I can tell you, or another thing, there's many of these things that I'm just okay having to give you the thumbnail sketch today, given our time limitations. But another thing that I can tell you from a solid gold, absolute, 100% fact, as someone who deals with these people in the abortion industry, and I'm telling you something, a lot of times when you deal with these people, you feel like you need to go home and take a sitz bath, but nonetheless, that's the way it works. These are not just people we disagree with. That's not what this is about. This is a whole different cadre of people. But I can tell you something, when you talk to them, there is a sense of foreboding in the abortion industry. There's no camaraderie. Morale is through the floor. In the typical abortion clinic in America today, if you go to work there today and you're what I call a tier two employee, you're not the owner, you're not the manager, you're not the director, you're not the abortionist, but you're the support staff, which they can't operate without, by the way. Off. All right. Abortion clinics are closing down in this country right now for no reason other than they can't get people to work in them. You know the beautiful irony here? They're being destroyed by choice. Because so much of the medical community is choosing not to get involved. They've never taken the stigma off abortion, and they never will. And this is another one of these things that they're talking about. They're openly talking about. They're doing campaigns right now to see what they can do to take the stigma off of abortion. And even some of them are saying, we may never be able to take the stigma off of it. We may just have to learn how to live with it. You know why they can't take the stigma off of it? Because it's just like pornography and prostitution. You can make them legal. You can pay for them with government money. You can advertise. You can give them 800 numbers. You can put them on television. And you're still not going to take the stigma off of it. You're not going to take it off of pornography. You're not going to take it off prostitution. And you're not going to take it off abortion. They're stigmatized by their nature. You don't think so? Let me ask you this question. There's thousands of little girls being born all across America today. If you were to go to the parents of those little girls and say, what is it you want your child to grow up to be? What would you like for this little girl to grow up and be? You know, some of them, sound went off again. It's weird. Some of them might say, oh, I want her to grow up to be a school teacher. I want her to grow up to be a politician. I want her to grow up to be this, whatever that might be. But let me ask this. How many of them would say, what I'd like for my daughter to grow up and be is a triple X porn star? How many would say that? How many would say, you know what I'd really like for her is to grow up to be a street prostitute? That's really what I'd like for her to do. That's kind of my dream for my daughter. How many of them would say that? Let me tell you something. It's a nice round number. Zero. That's how many would say that. But let's just say you made prostitution perfectly legal today. And you tried to sanitize it, and you made it paid for with government dollars. And you think, well, that's preposterous. Nobody would ever do that. Well, 100 years ago or 50 years ago, if you'd have said, we're going to legalize abortion and pay for it with government dollars, people would have been just as incredulous at that. But here we are. Right? So it's not any more preposterous than that is. But let's say you make a prostitution legal, and you pay for it with government dollars, and you let them advertise on television, and they take MasterCard and Visa, and they got 800 numbers and whatever, right? And you rock it forward 25 years, and now there's a bunch of little baby girls being born that day. How many of those parents would say, oh, I think I want my daughter to grow up and be a prostitute? It'd still be that same nice round number. Because no matter what you do to it, you can't clean it up. And the abortion industry has now started to figure that out about their own industry. They can't clean it up. There's nothing they can do. There is nothing they can do to clean this thing up. And I can tell you the morale in these places is horrible. Like I said, you go to work in one of these places as a second-tier employee, like a support staff member. If you're there 90 days from now, you'll be the senior member of the staff. The turnover rate in these places is astronomical. Now, we do a lot of infiltration type work, and we're going to ratchet that up. I'll tell you something about that here in a minute. We're ratcheting that up right now. You know what the number one source of information in the abortion industry is? Employees. You'd be amazed how many of these people will talk to you and what they'll tell you, especially if they're engaged in illegal activity. And I'm going to tell you right now, there's not one abortion clinic in this country that's not engaged in illegal activity of some kind. And most of them are engaged in several types of illegal activity. And a lot of those employees, when we sat down and start talking to them, and when Renee and I got that interview with those three down in Houston, and if you haven't seen that interview, you need to go online to YouTube and watch it and hear them talking about all the babies that are born alive that they kill outside the womb. They twist their heads off. They stick instruments through the soft spot of the head. They push their thumbs through the thorax to kill them. That's the kind of people we're dealing with. But you know what? You know why they came and talked to Renee and I? You know what they were concerned about? They didn't want to go to jail. That's what they're concerned about. We can, as a movement, we can capitalize on that, and we should capitalize on it. And that's what we've been doing at Life Dynamics since 1992, and we're fixing to ratchet this up. In the past, when we've had these real high-profile, successful infiltration projects, I've often received calls from people saying, can I come there and have you train me how to do that? I want to be an infiltrator. I want to be a spy. I want to be an intel operative. And I always resisted that. I didn't want to do it. I only did it twice. Actually, I did it once, but with two people at the same time. And one of those was a guy named James O'Keefe. He turned out to be the guy that brought down Acorn. Remember that? And the other one was Lila Rose. And I trained both of them at the same time. But I still didn't go out and start training other people. Now we're starting that. We have just introduced Life Dynamics Intel Operatives Training, Intel Operations Training. And we're training people. We're going to put, by the end of this year, Renee and I will have put at least 100 professional intel operatives around the country. There won't be just two or three. And we're being very selective about who goes. We just had the first training February 23rd and 24th. We just had the first one. The next one comes up March 21st and 22nd. It's already sold out. When I say sold out, I mean it's filled. We're not charging anybody to go to it. But we're absorbing all the cost of putting these seminars on. But we're going to put professional intel operatives out in the field. Now, you might ask, well, why didn't you do this before? And I'm going to go back to the technology issue, because this is the other way that technology has helped us. We have done lots of projects at Life Dynamics, lots of intel projects, come out with really cool stuff about the abortion industry. Put it out in the public, and the media totally ignores it. You have to remember something. The American news media, and I'm sure this is not going to be coming as a big shock, this is not on the level with Japan surrenders as far as a, you know, revelation goes. But the American media in this country is owned lock, stock, and barrel by the abortion lobby. So we would come out here and we would say, we would prove, not theorize about it, we prove that certain things are going on, and they totally ignore it, and it dies on the vine. They can't do that anymore. They cannot do this anymore. You know, when we released in 2000 the original expose on the marketing of baby parts, that they chop up the babies that they kill in the abortion clinics, they chop up their bodies and sell them for parts. And sometimes they sell the intact body, or sometimes they just drain the blood out of it and sell the blood out of them. We revealed that in 2000, and it got a lot of attention. Got a lot of attention. We wound up on 2020. Now, David has come along and redone the same thing in 2015, right? And the amount of attention he got went off the chart compared to what we got. And I'm not complaining about this, but I've talked to him about it, and he agrees totally that the difference is the internet and social media. That technology has changed. Let me tell you something. On the day that the internet became a reality, the American abortion lobby lost its monopoly on the flow of information to the American people. That's what the internet did. And then social media, this ratchets that up. And this is a genie they can't put back in the bottle. So nowadays, when we reveal something, when we go undercover and we get the dirt on them, we have a mechanism to put that out, regardless of what the media does. You want to ignore it, then you ignore it. That's fine. But we got another way of getting this information out. So that's why it's more important now to do this intel operations training that we're doing than it would have been, say, 10 years ago. We would have had, we could have put 100 operatives out there. They could have got a lot of really good stuff and had no way to get it out. Now they do. And again, this is another example of how technology favors us. And the fact is, it always will. It always will. And this is another reason these people are in such despair. Have you noticed two things about them? I've been saying for years on our, we have a monthly television talk show, pro-life television show. I've been doing it since 1999. And I've been saying on that show for years, the closer we get to winning, the one way you're going to be able to tell how close we're getting to winning is how nasty and vicious the other side gets. Right? The more nasty and the more vicious they get, the motivation behind that is they know they're losing and they can't do anything about it. If you're watching two NFL teams play, and it's the fourth quarter, and one team is way out ahead, hopefully that would be the Cowboys, but that's another issue. It hasn't been for a while, but hopefully, you know, hope springs eternal. Let's say the Cowboys are way ahead and they're playing the Eagles. Cowboys are way out ahead. Eagles cannot possibly catch up. And a big fight breaks out in the fourth quarter. Who started that fight? The Eagles started that fight. Now, if the Cowboys were behind and that same fight broke out, it would have been the Cowboys that started it. Whoever's behind starts the fight every time. And we're seeing all over this country right now vicious attacks on pro-lifers from the abortion industry that we never saw 10 years ago. They know they're losing. They know they're losing. And we're seeing more and more evidence of this. They're going to get more vicious as time goes on. And one of the things that I want to make sure you guys understand is to be committed to this battle totally. Because as it gets more vicious, and as we get closer to winning, every inch we advance is going to be harder. It's in my new book, Siege, I write about it, and I call it the rubber band phenomenon. I want you to imagine that we put a post in this stage and post back here, and we put a real strong rubber band across this post. And we're on this side of the rubber band. And the goal is to push this rubber band across this stage and touch that rail right there. Right? That's our goal. Now, the first inch or two we push this rubber band, man, it's no problem. It pushes real easy. Right? And then it gets a little bit harder and a little bit harder. And by the time we get over here, it takes 100 times as much force to push that rubber band an inch as it did when it was over there. That's the way this is going to work. And that's the way it is working. We're seeing all the evidence of this. The rubber band effect is very real. And so what you've got to be prepared for is that when you come up here and I say, okay, now I want you to help me push this rubber band, and you push it a little bit and say, it's no big deal. That's easy. I like this. This is fun. Okay. Are you still liking it? Are you still committed to it when you're right here? Because that's what you better be if you intend to push it over. Because if you don't, then it's going to pop back where it was. The closer we get to winning, the more vicious they're going to become. And there are some things we need to be looking out for. Yes, we are winning. But again, it's like a football game or a baseball game. Does it ever happen, let's say in a baseball game, that the team that's ahead at the end of the seventh inning winds up not winning that game? Does that ever happen? It happens a lot. Right? We're ahead. And I don't know what inning it is, but we're ahead. But we could still lose. And we got some things to be looking out for. And I just want to give you touch base with a couple of them that I talk about in this new book, Siege. One of them is we have got people in this country who are pouring billions, and I don't mean millions, I mean billions of dollars into the abortion lobby. Warren Buffett, Bill and Melinda Gates, they are pouring billions of their own money voluntarily into the abortion lobby to prop it up. Just one example. At the University of San Francisco in California, they have one of the biggest problems the abortion industry has today. Like I said, they're being killed by choice. Doctors don't want to be involved in abortion. They have a whole department there to train people to do nothing but work in abortion clinics. Warren Buffett alone, not counting what Bill and Melinda Gates put into it, Warren Buffett alone puts between $50 and $100 million a year of his own money into that project. They're pouring billions into this. Billions into it. And there's all kinds of research out there. They're putting together a cadre of people that they're saying, these are billionaires, that they're saying, we want you to put at least half of your worth into this. Warren Buffett has committed 90% of his net worth, and he's second or third richest person in America, in the world. 90% of his net worth he has dedicated to this project, and a big part of that money goes into the abortion industry. These are the modern-day eugenicists. We have a video out called Ma'afa 21. It's a documentary that documents how the real motivation for the legalization of abortion was eugenics, to get rid of the black community and now the Hispanic community. That was the motivation behind abortion, the legalization of it originally. And we fully document that in the Ma'afa 21. How many have seen Ma'afa 21? Okay, can anybody here say that that's not true, that what I just said is not true, that we did not document that? It's a fact. It's easy to look at that and say, well, that was back in the days of the Carnegies and the Fords and the Rockefellers and those kind of people. But they're all dead and gone. That's right, they are. And they've been replaced by people named Buffett, Bill Gates, Melinda Gates, George Soros. Oprah Winfrey's getting involved in this project. This is frightening how much money these people are dedicating to this. And the very most frightening thing about it is that there's no pushback on the other side. There are not gazillionaires out there pouring billions of dollars into the pro-life movement. That's fine. These people might have all the money and power they think that anybody in the world has, and they do, but they don't have more power and more money than God's got. So let's not worry about that. But I want to give you another very tangible thing that's going on. Have you ever had a situation in your life, and I'm sure all of you have, where something was going on and you didn't really understand it, why it was happening, or you may be ill, or you may have some physical problems or whatever, and then all of a sudden you get a diagnosis for it and you go, well, why didn't we say that? Right? We've all had that. My brother was diabetic. And when he was finally, he had all kinds of health problems. And when he finally diagnosed the juvenile onset diabetes, we look at the symptoms and say, well, dang, he had every one of them. Why didn't we see that? So we're always susceptible to this. We miss the obvious, right? That's why people are able to hide in plain sight, because we miss the obvious. There's one that's going on right now that we better darn sure be paying attention to. Several years ago, and I'm sure some of y'all remember this, goes back into the Bush administration. Planned Parenthood started building these gigantic, mega abortion clinics around the country. The one in Houston is mind-boggling. Five-story building to do abortions. It is enormous. It is so big they're not even using two or three floors of it right now. It's the largest abortion clinic in the Western Hemisphere. It's enormous. One in Seattle, Washington, or Portland, Washington. Same deal. Build these mega centers. And they've built them all over the United States. They're spread out all over the United States. Now, let's go back and analyze this from a business standpoint, because the abortion industry is a business. We see it as a moral issue. They see it as a business, because that's what it is for them. And I said earlier that this is not a healthy business. This is not a healthy environment. You wouldn't put a lot of money into this unless you were doing it for philosophical reasons. But you wouldn't, from a financial standpoint, you wouldn't put money in the abortion industry. When they started doing all this building, they went on this gigantic nationwide building spree. Support for legalized abortion in the country was plummeting. The abortion rate was plummeting. You know, I said earlier there were 2,126 abortion clinics in the United States when I started Life Dynamics. And now there's 550 or so. A lot of people say, well, yeah, but that's just because they're doing more abortions per abortion clinic. That's totally untrue. The abortion rate went down from 1.7 million to about 1 million right now. He said, well, 1 million babies is still a disgrace. Yes, 1 million dead babies being killed for financial profit is an absolute disgrace. And if we think that we're going to escape God's judgment over this, that God cares about our tax policy, our regressive tax policy, and he cares about our immigration policy, and he cares about all the things that we think are so important that we elect a president based on these things, but he doesn't care about the wholesale slaughter of 3,000 of his babies every day, and we're going to escape judgment for that? If we think that, we're nuts. We are crazy as drugstore rats if we don't think that God is going to come after us for that. That's a fact. But why did the abortion lobby, and when I talk about this thing of abortion rate going down, when it went from 1.7 million in 1992 to 1 million today, you know what that means? Think about this for a minute. That means today, in America, as horrible as things are, we're killing 2,000 fewer babies per day than we were killing 25 years ago. At a time when the population is 20% higher, that's a major victory for the pro-life movement. Don't ever let anybody tell you you're not winning. Don't ever let anybody demean what you're doing. It's the people in this room that have done this. It's not these people in Washington, D.C. It's not these people in your state capital. It's not the people in Austin, Texas that are doing this. It's the people in this room that are doing it. And we'll continue to do it. But why did the abortion industry go out and go on this massive, totally unjustified building project at a time when support for their position was going down, the abortion rate was plummeting, they weren't getting as much federal funding as they wanted? Any legitimate businessman would look at that and say, well, wait a minute, this is not the time to be going out here and building five-story buildings to do abortion clinics, to do abortions in. Why would you put this thing on the Katy Freeway in Houston, Texas, when you've got abortion clinics right now that are doing 30 and 40% less business already existing than what they were doing 5 years ago? Why would you build these big, massive buildings? So I started looking at that from a businessman standpoint, trying to figure out, why would they do that? And I came to a conclusion, and I watched it and I let it sit and think about it for a while and saw other things that were going on, and everything I saw supports this conclusion. And I talk about it again in this new book I have. They're getting prepared for something bigger. They're not building these things for the now. They're building these things for the future. And let me tell you what the future is. And we better be prepared for this. You know, being forewarned is forearmed, right? If I show you where the trip wires are, you'd be a fool to go trip on all those wires. Let me tell you what they're building up to. They're building up to Planned Parenthood becoming an agency of the federal government. They're building up to that right now. And it's not just this building campaign that proves that. There's several other things that are happening. And we could very easily look up here one day, and especially right now, we're in a dangerous part of American history. Barack Obama is capable of anything. Any form of moral depravity that you can think about, this man's capable of. I think you could very easily see a press conference be called, cameras come up, and there's Barack Obama standing there with Cecile Richards at his side and saying, today, I'm signing an executive order. Whether this is legal or not is irrelevant. This man doesn't care what's legal or not. I'm signing an executive order today bringing Planned Parenthood into the federal government under the Department of Health and Human Services. The Planned Parenthood name will now be changed, and it'll be called, oh, I don't know, United States Department of Women and Reproductive Health. And they'll be brought into the government. This solves all of Planned Parenthood's problems. Solves every one of them. And the thing that when I first started looking at this, and then I started seeing other evidence beyond this building program that was reinforcing this idea, it was one of those deals like, man, why didn't we see this before? Well, now we do see it. And we better start paying attention to it, because this could happen. Now, one of the biggest things that Planned Parenthood is upset about and has been upset about for years is they can't keep us out of the, they can't get themselves into the schools. They can't keep us from keeping them out. Once they're an agency of the federal government, there's no way we can keep them out of the school system. But the list goes on and on. We're winning, but there are tripwires out there that we better be aware of. There are tripwires. And if we've got good sense, we'll be paying attention to them. Now, something that the Benham brothers kind of stole my thunder a little bit, but I'm going to reinforce it anyway. There is no doubt, there can be no doubt, that the pro-life movement is going to win this battle ultimately. I don't know if I'm going to live long enough to see that. I've had this conversation with Renee several times and with my daughter and some of the younger people that work with us. I have worked a long time to see the end of this thing, and I've prayed for it, and you know, and it's pure selfishness on my part, pure ego and selfishness. Please, God, let me live long enough to see the end of this. But I might not make it. I'm 68, or will be here in a few days. So I might not make it. Like I said, I went from being the youngest guy in the room to being the oldest one. I'm still hanging on, pretty healthy. But I might not make it. But I'm going to tell you something. You see these kids at this table right here? They're going to see it. They're going to see the end of this. And I've told Renee, she's 27 years younger than me, 26 years, whatever it is. And I said, I may not be running Life Dynamics when this thing ends, but you will be. If I'm not, you will be. You'll see the end of it, and they will too. And the reason for that is very simple, and I'll end with that. Did or did not God tell us the gates of hell will not prevail against you? Did he not say that? Right? That's not a commandment to play defense. He said it will not prevail against us. That means you attack the gates of hell. And if you do, you'll prevail. If you don't think that an abortion clinic is a gate into hell, you haven't been paying attention. That is the purest form of a gate into hell right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Martin. Thank you. Wow. We've only got about 3-4 minutes here, so we'll try to get as many questions in as we can. Just so you know, we are live broadcast on our radio program right there in the back, and we are saving the questions we don't get to so that we will be able to get to them and answer them as quick as we can. First, Mark, someone's challenging your information on how you say that polls reveal that there are more pro-life than pro-choice people. Where do you get this information? Because I'm hearing the opposite.
Well, if you're hearing the opposite of that, you're hearing it from someone in the media that is radically pro-abortion. But if you look at all the polling, go to the real data, don't listen to what the reports are. Go to the actual data. You'll see that if you take the pro-abortion position, which is that abortion should be legal right up to the moment of birth for any reason whatsoever, for no reason whatsoever, by a girl of any age, without parental knowledge, without parental consent, paid for with tax dollars. That is the pro-choice position. Very, very few people agree with that position. The vast majority of people, I saw a poll just a couple of days ago that said like 38% of the people in that poll said that abortion should be illegal in all circumstances, and another 31% said it should be illegal in all but a couple of hardcore situations. That's almost 70% who say that to some degree abortion should be ended. So you can't sit here and look at what I have seen situations where the media would take a poll that found X, and then they would write an article about that poll and said a new poll just found out Y. Go to the original documentation and see what it said. Don't believe what they tell you. Does anybody in here think that we have a national news media or even a local news media anywhere in this country who's not a collection of pathological liars? Does anybody believe that?
Well, you had a great story in the end of your book about the two racers, the Soviet Union and the
right.
Americans racing.
Right.
And they're going to find which country has the best and the fastest.
Right.
And they run this race and the American wins. And the next day in the Soviet paper, it said, Russians finished second in big race. Americans finished second to last.
Right. Next to last. Right.
solve the same thing, but they twist it, right?
But if you think that the Russian Pravda or anyone else is any more honest than the New York Times or any other media source in the United States, let's just put it this way, you're wrong.
Okay, so that's just the media. Let's go to the legal thing. It kind of ties into what you were sharing there. This situation with the undercover videos, and it seems like the good guys are getting indicted and the bad people are getting away. Why is that?
We talk about that in our intel training, and I'm not going to get into details about this, but David made some mistakes that we warned him about. Renee and I were on the phone with him for many, many hours over the years that he was doing this. But David got caught up in youthful exuberance. And, you know, I tried to tell him, I said, David, you're making some mistakes here that's going to cost you. I said, youthful exuberance always loses out to old age and treachery. And I'm old and treacherous, so I've been down this trail. But he made some mistakes, and I don't want to get into the details.
Okay, because someone asked, can you reveal your methods? I don't think that would...
No, that's not.
but is it legal? What you're doing legal was another question.
Absolutely. Okay. We stress that in the training that we do, the intel training. And I want to make a point to you. We've been doing this since 1993. We did our first intelligence gathering operation in 1993. We've never been sued. We've never been indicted for anything. And the reason for that is simple. We're old age and treachery, right? Mm-hmm. But the other thing is, what you have to understand, this is an argument that I tried to get over to David. Anything that you want to do in an intelligence gathering environment that's illegal, you can find a way to do it legally. That's your challenge. Your challenge is not to say, this is illegal, but we'd really like to get this information, so we're going to go out here and take the chance. No, that's stupid. Sit back and say, wait a minute, this is illegal, but we want this information. What's another way we can get that information? And in the years that I've been doing this, and we've done almost all the big projects that you've ever heard about as far as intelligence gathering originated with Life Dynamics, I've never seen something that we wanted to do that had value to it from an intelligence gathering standpoint that was illegal that we couldn't find a legal way to do it. You always can. You just got to be smarter than the other side. That's basically what it boils down to. It's the law of the jungle.
You've been listening to Mark Kretcher, president of Life Dynamics, and a 2016 Bringing America Back to Life Convention speaker.